From Muhlenberg College, this is 2400 Chew. Your host is Megan Keita. In each episode of this podcast, we talk to one Muhlenberg graduate about their current work and the industry in which that work is done. For this episode, Megan spoke with Dr. Lance Bruck, class of 89, Vice President and Chair of Obstetrics, Gynecology and Women's Health Services at Jersey City Medical Center and Chair, Muhlenberg College Board of Trustees. As we do with most of these interviews, the conversation began by asking how and when Dr. Bruck became interested in his occupation.
So my interest in medicine started a really long time ago, probably when I was growing up, early days in Brooklyn. It actually started, interestingly, with a fascination with insects. As a young kid, I spent many a summer evenings dissecting insects. And, you know, I think it grew from there, my interest in sciences. I was the first to go to college in my family, and I knew that I wanted to do sciences, and that was a sort of a big reason that I wound up at Muhlenberg. I didn't have a lot of guidance on where to go to college. I was fortunate before my senior year of high school to have enrolled in the Cornell summer program and took two classes there, and found it very odd that I was taking a class with hundreds of people being taught by someone who had just taken the class maybe the semester or two before. And it just didn't seem to me like the right learning environment. So I was definitely looking for smaller liberal arts colleges. And I was fortunate that I had a high school college advisor who kind of pointed me in the direction of Muhlenberg, knowing my interest in science and my thought that I would want to pursue a career in medicine. And, you know, that ultimately led me to Muhlenberg and studying biology and then ultimately adding on a second major in philosophy.
Tell me what got you interested in adding a major in philosophy.
So the sciences, you know, are very much sort of black and white. And, you know, it was easy for me to excel in the sciences. And, you know, at least when I was a late teenager, I had the ability to read a textbook and then I could literally in a blue book exam write word for word what I had read in the textbook. So, you know, that part was pretty easy, but I realized, and you know, and obviously Muhlenberg and the fact that I was taking science exams and actually having to write narratives versus just doing the little bubble tests, it got me interested in, you know, how you think about the world. And you know, that sort of led me into taking a look at philosophy as a second major. One of the courses I took at Cornell that summer was in biomedical ethics. So that was sort of my introduction to it. And, you know, that then led me to take another class. And I then met some really dynamic professors. And the analytical part of a philosophy, one of the courses was actually formal logic and trying to think through problem solving. And then I kind of got hooked. And that's how I wound up double majoring in biology and philosophy. And many, many times I'm asked by people, you know, talking about how, you know, what led to success, you know, after college. And, you know, obviously I needed a strong background in the sciences, but I actually attribute, you know, attending a liberal arts college like Muhlenberg and being able to be a science major and take a philosophy major, which really taught me the analytical skills that have enabled me through my, you know, now fourth decade of professional career to excel and to thrive and to do things that I probably never thought I would be doing when I was sitting as a undergrad at Muhlenberg or quite honestly as a medical student. So, you know, I'm very reflective of that always, and that is the aspect that makes, you know, liberal arts education so powerful and a tool that students can ultimately use to be successful, regardless of whatever their path is that they choose to take.
And can you tell me how you carried that exploration through medical school and how you came to the realization that women's health was the specialty that you wanted to land on?
You know, when I entered medical school, I already had taken, you know, medical school level science courses at Muhlenberg, including biochemistry, which is one of the main courses in medical school. And that course at Muhlenberg was actually taught by a professor who taught at Ohio State Medical School before pursuing a career in undergraduate education at Muhlenberg. As enlightening and engaging as I found my liberal arts education, unfortunately, medical school is the exact opposite. So I actually feel like I took a step somewhat backwards because, you know, as I mentioned, you know, having to take courses at Muhlenberg and write answers and think analytically, medical school was not like that at all. Medical school was purely try to jam as much information as you can into your brain for a very short period of time and then regurgitating it in a bubble exam. And I struggled my first 2 years of medical school because I really was not engaged. I found it to be, you know, there was nothing that was piquing my intellectual curiosity. I mean, it really was survival mode, at, you know, and to get through it. So fortunately, I did, and I did it in the, you know, the required 2 years and was able to move on to third year where you start to do the clinical work. And then, you know, and then I really enjoyed the third and fourth year of medical school and, you know, was very fortunate, you know, in the early 90s to be a medical student where the level of engagement as a medical student is very different than it is today. When I entered medical school, I thought I wanted to do orthopedics and in particular trauma orthopedics. So I started my third year clinical rotations with that in mind. And when you set up your third year and you have to do your core rotations, you know, basically it's sort of this lottery and you kind of put a list in of order you want to do the rotations. And then for each one, you pick several of the locations that you can train. And I wound up putting OBGYN first. And the reason I did that is I felt that it was a combination of surgery and medicine and obstetrics. And it was a good way to get my, essentially my hands dirty clinically and do it in a way that was very general. So that's what I did. And, you know, I was fortunate that I picked the right place to do that. And I wound up meeting one of my mentors who was a very senior obstetrician gynecologist who had a really long career in academic medicine. And we connected and, you know, he was someone who was very invested in the next generation and really took the time to be a mentor. And, you know, one of the things that has really stayed with me throughout my career and has guided my career is about mentorship. And maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later. But to answer your question, during that rotation, two things happened to me. One, OBGYN and women's health connected with me because it's such a diverse field and you do so many different things in a given day. And as I thought about, you know, my interests and what I like to do and someone who likes to master things and then can get bored really quickly, OBGYN and women's health was a field that I felt that could keep me engaged and interested for many decades and has proven to be true. And, you know, you can be a pure generalist in the beginning and then you can decide to sort of focus on a particular area as your career develops. And that really was a big appeal for me. And then the second part was experiences in the operating room. I remember vividly doing what we call an exploratory laparotomy, where we open up a woman's abdomen and we remove the basketball sized tumor. And I was like, wow, you know, you can take out this tumor that weighs several pounds, close the patient's abdomen. And a couple of days later, they're walking out of the hospital and going back to their regular activities. And that was just like the coolest thing to me. And it was inspiring. And I said, wow, I could really see myself doing this. And then as I went through third year, I actually really enjoyed all of my clinical rotations. Each one brought something different to the table. But when I reflected and then was thinking about residency, I did really have a good time when I was doing orthopedics as a medical student. But But the large tumors was something that just I couldn't get away with. And that's what how I chose to, you know, to go into OBGYN and women's health. And, you know, it's been an extremely rewarding career. And I'm, you know, very pleased with that pathway, you know, developed for me.
Yeah. And you mentioned that, you know, one of the appeals of the field was you could be a generalist or you could focus on a particular area as your career develops. Did you choose to focus on a particular area? And if so, what was it and why?
My career has had a lot of interesting twists and turns to it. I mentioned earlier, I'm one who likes to be involved and I get bored easily doing repetitive things. So not only did, was the field of OBGYN in terms of the clinical part interesting, and you know, my career, when I finished residency, I was fortunate that I got the opportunity to stay at the organization where I did my residency, which was the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York. And they had asked me to stay at one of our hospitals and build up the surgical volume. And, you know, it was 97 when I finished my residency training. And it really was at the right as the escalation in moving towards minimally invasive surgery was happening in my field, and I got to be right there as it was developing and really enjoyed being a part of that and being a leader in the field and being able to develop minimally invasive approaches to dealing with the host of both benign and malignant conditions that women's, you know, can have related to their gynecologic organs or pelvic organs. That was really the first big part of my career. I also was able to match it with an interest in research, and I never saw myself as a researcher. You know, I did a little bit of research when I was at Muhlenberg, using an elective, doing electron microscopy, and even early days of doing PCR, which probably was at the very beginning when I was at Muhlenberg, you know, now that is, you know, mainstay in sciences and in healthcare. But I got an interesting opportunity when I was practicing where a company reached out to me, I think just because I had been publishing and, you know, related to surgery. And it was a trial related to IV Tylenol for postoperative pain, which now is a, you know, a medication that's widely used. And it was their pivotal study, and they weren't meeting their enrollment numbers. And I got an opportunity to join that trial and wound up being the highest enroller for that trial. And that then opened up a floodgate, because within clinical research, all of the companies talk and they have their own platforms that they communicate, and was able to run a research center related to gynecology and actually focused on things that I was interested in. So I got to work on early trials related to the human papillomavirus or HPV vaccine. So a lot of that pivotal work was done at Einstein, and I got to participate in those trials. I already mentioned, you know, some of the novel postoperative pain medications, and then did other work on vaccine therapies. And the other big area was related to urologic dysfunction in women, you know, a condition that's called detrusor instability, or more commonly known as urge incontinence, a series of drugs that were developed in the mid to late 90s that came to market and have really benefited probably millions of women, and got to work on those trials. So that was sort of my first evolution. And then as my career progressed, when I left Einstein, I moved my career. I became a chair at an academic community hospital affiliated with Columbia in Connecticut, and was able to launch the robotic surgical program there in, I think it was 2009. That was early days for the robotics program. So that was another opportunity to continue to develop my skill set and being involved in new and novel techniques. And, you know, I can probably keep going on, but that's sort of been the pathway. But, you know, along the way, I also got very involved in the business of medicine. And again, never took a business course in high school or at Muhlenberg, trying to double major and be a science major. There was no room for any business courses. I got early days, again, opportunities presented itself. And, you know, certainly for any younger audience members who may listen to this, when opportunities present, you know, don't be afraid to jump in and take a risk. And particularly advocating for Muhlenberg grads or liberal arts grads, you have a lot of skills that you obtain going through a liberal arts education. And I really believe there's nothing that you can't do if you put your mind to it. I think our liberal arts educated students are wired in a way that they're very adaptable. And I've had a very successful career as a healthcare executive, really working on the business side from operations and finance. And, you know, I've run medical groups and I've run large organizations, and I had no training. It was a willingness to jump in and, you know, an open mind and ability to listen, reason, and continue to build upon what were my core strengths and develop new strengths. And, you know, again, I attribute that to my education at Muhlenberg, and it's led to a very enriching career and a successful career. And, you know, as I continue to be involved in education, I really like to advocate for people to really think about that, you know, particularly when they're young, and sometimes it's hard to get younger people to listen. And I was once a young person, so I know what it's like to sometimes pretend that you're listening and not really listen. But it is good advice. And, you know, and obviously there's a lot of people who are looking for mentorship and can't talk enough about younger people and even older people. I mean, even at this point in my career, mentorship might be defined slightly differently, where it's maybe mentor colleagues, but having someone you can talk to and share ideas and thoughts and bounce things off of is critically important, no matter what you decide to pursue.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing your story. That was a lot of what I wanted to ask about. But would you describe your current role as being primarily a role that is involved in the business of medicine?
So my current role is quite complex. I have responsibility for all of the clinical and operations for women's and children's health for Hudson County, New Jersey, which is the largest by population county and is obviously quite diverse, being right along the Hudson River, and it crosses all demographics. And, you know, we have obviously people who have good healthcare coverage, take care of themselves, to, you know, large pockets of patients who could be undocumented, have no insurance. And the goal, thankfully, for the facility I work at is to provide care to all and equal care to all. So I spend a lot of my time really kind of split into sort of three pockets. So, you know, one is, you know, administrative responsibilities for running those services. As an educator, we are partners with, as I mentioned, Rutgers New Jersey Medical School and Rutgers Health as a whole. So I have residents, fellows, medical students, and a whole host of other learners that are spending time 24/7 on our service. And I have to make sure that all of those students are engaged in the work that they're doing. And, you know, that a pretty big undertaking. And I still have managed to remain clinically active, because I believe as a healthcare leader, to really understand what your team is going through, you got to be in the trenches. So I continue to practice. My practice has definitely gotten narrower as my career has developed. And I really kind of focus my time right now treating women for pre-invasive and invasive disease. And it's very rewarding. And I work with my residents. So all of my clinical activities are done in a teaching environment. And it's an environment that I very much look forward to. I see patients in the office on Wednesday. So my team there knows that when I get there on Wednesday, it's the highlight of my week. And I don't let any of the administrative work interfere with my clinical work, because that's kind of my safe space and my happy space, you know, and I really enjoy spending time not only caring for the patients, but actually teaching the next generation, you know, what I've been able to learn over many decades.
Can you kind of tell me about what a typical day looks like for you that's not a Wednesday, that's not when you're seeing patients and working with the students you're teaching? Like, what does a typical day look like for you?
So each day of the week for me starts off with the schedule, but with the different hats that I wear, it usually takes a very windy course. So I've learned to be very adaptable, because no matter what my schedule may say, it never winds up going that way. You know, the nature of women's health, there's emergencies all the time, you know, particularly related to our obstetrical service. And it's very unpredictable. I mean, including, you know, surges in volume to acutely ill patients. So I come in every morning. I start the day pretty early. I'm up at about 5:30 every morning. I'm usually in the office by 6:45 to 7. I'm actually doing calls starting pretty early in the morning. My work from Muhlenberg is as a trustee. I do a lot of my trustee calls actually at 7 o'clock, and thankfully my fellow trustees are willing to accommodate my early morning. So that's how I usually start my day, almost Monday through Friday. Then I get to the office, and you know, it does depend on the day of the week, but I usually will check in and with my team and make sure nothing happened overnight, even though my team knows that I expect that they would notify me in the evening, so that when I wake up, I check my phone. There's no surprises, but you know, I check in with everybody. And then it's a combination of a lot of meetings. You know, as an administrator of a hospital, there's a lot of meetings to go to. So I have a lot of meetings each day. We certainly have adapted to continuing with Zoom meetings. So it is additive in that I'm not running around from building to building, and we're a multi-hospital campus across the entire state of New Jersey. So it does cut down on a lot of travel time, which I think is advantageous and makes me more efficient. I do a lot of check-in with my team throughout the day. As a leader, they expect me to be available to bounce off from simple questions to complex questions. So a lot of my day is taken up by that. And that part of that is unpredictability, because it really just depends what happens to be going on that given day. Mondays are my OR days. So, you know, I talked about being in the office Wednesday, but Mondays I'm usually in the OR again with my team of residents and medical students. And that's really kind of the week. And then, you know, unfortunately, there's a tremendous amount of paperwork that needs to be done, both administratively and clinically. We use a sophisticated electronic medical record system, and some people believe that's made healthcare better and more efficient. I'm one that questions that. It certainly has made for a lot more work sitting in front of a computer, which I'm not sure is in the best interest of actual patient care. But you know, that's an ongoing debate that I have with others, and I'm not sure in 2024 I'm going to win that war. But the nature of my personality is to keep advocating for what I believe, and you know, I believe healthcare providers need to be at the patient's bedside, not sitting in front of computer terminals. But you know, the world is continues to move into the direction of using more and more of technology embedded in what we do in healthcare every day. And I love technology. It's just, I don't think that's a substitute for being at the bedside with patients.
So can you talk to me about the most challenging aspects of your job and also the most rewarding aspect?
The most challenging aspect of my job is really managing personnel. No, I think, you know, in the administrative role, healthcare, you know, my healthcare system, I think has 40,000 plus employees, and I've got a lot of employees, you know, under my responsibility. Healthcare is a very stressful environment, particularly the field of obstetrics, gynecology, or women's health. And, you know, the lingering effects of the pandemic on healthcare, I think it's affected industries differently, but the impact on healthcare, you know, is still lingering. I mean, the amount of burnout of healthcare individuals, regardless of the roles that they're in, I think is going to go on for a very, very, very long time. You know, many industries were able to adapt and obviously go to remote work, and different industries have drifted back and how people have come back to work. But, you know, you got to remember, you know, March of 2020, people stopped going to work and, you know, just stayed at home for a year and a half to 2 years, and some places longer. Healthcare employees had to go to work in a hospital with, you know, during a global pandemic, not knowing if they were going to, you know, bring home a virus to affect their families or their own health. And think about the psychological impact of that. It is tremendous. And, you know, I could tell you, my wife and I split time between New York City and a home north of the city. We moved out of the city for about a year and a half, but I was still going into work. And I, you know, when I would get home every day, particularly early days of late winter, early spring of 2020, I was scared of bringing home the virus to my family. And my daughter, who was a Muhlenberg class of 21, was sent home, and she was at home with my wife. My son, who her twin brother, was in school down in University of Miami. And as everyone knows, Miami didn't have a COVID pandemic, so he stayed down in school. But I literally would get home from a day of work, you know, and I would, you know, get undressed in the garage. I'd go up the back stairs that led to the laundry room. I'd throw all my clothes in, put run on hot water, go into a shower for about 30 minutes, you know, a scalding hot shower for 30 minutes before I would come down to my family. And that was on top of, you know, wearing, you know, an N95 respirator and gloves all day long. It was unnerving. And, you know, so I experienced it. So when I, you know, when I hear other healthcare employees talk about the effects, it is actually real. And it has taken a huge toll on healthcare employees. And as I mentioned, I think that's going to go on for many, many more years to come. So, you know, dealing with personnel and trying to deliver care where a lot of people have left the field, there's a lot of burnout. There's a lot of anxiety that in a high stress environment, which is the normal work, then boils to the surface as conflict, and trying to keep all of that under the lid and then actually provide the high level of care that patients need to get. That's the biggest challenge. And then, you know, on the flip side, we kind of talked about it. It's those same people. It's my colleagues that I really enjoy spending time with and doing that in an environment where we're actually doing good every day. My wife, who's works in global finance, you know, always says, you know, it's a strange world where people working in finance are able to earn X dollars, and, you know, people who are in healthcare who are actually doing something meaningful are toiling away. And her view, and I probably agree with her view to some degree, you know, don't get the recognition for the work that they do day in and day out and taking care of the infirm and the sick. I think it's more complicated than that. And I've always believed that medicine's not a job. It's not even a career. To me, it's passion. And at least that's what it should be. It's gotten very complicated for people to look at the world in medicine today, being with the corporatization of medicine. But I'm still a firm believer that the vast majority of people who pursue a career in medicine believe that it's, you know, it is a passion about helping another human being out. And that is at the root of it. And that is important. And I think anything I can do in my career to continue to make sure that is highlighted is something I'm committed to, even if I'm going against sort of the trends that we see now in healthcare.
Yeah. So on the note of, you know, your colleagues being the most rewarding part of your job, I wanted to go back to what you said about mentorship being really important to you. Can you talk more about that? Can you talk about what you try to do in a mentor role and how mentors of yours have shaped your own mentoring of others?
Throughout my career, I've always been cognizant to look for mentorship. There's been periods of time where I've been more successful than others. And I think in the evolution of a career, there are times where mentorship can be very difficult. But I think early days, certainly as a student at any level, early days of a professional career, mentorship should be actually pretty easy, right? I mean, it's, you know, a willingness to go up and ask somebody to be your mentor. And, you know, hopefully you get a positive response. And, you know, certainly if the first person you ask says no, don't be discouraged. Continue to pursue, because obviously if they don't want to be a mentor, they're not going to be a good mentor, and pursue that. I think as you develop through your career and you become more senior, there is an awkward period where you're sort of like in between. It may be hard to find a mentor, but I mentioned earlier, I think even today, as someone who's very senior in his career, I've been able to find mentorship through colleagues. So people that I've grew up with and have, you know, come up through the ranks with, who've become close colleagues, we have become each other's mentors. And, you know, I'm thinking of a couple of individuals who I've worked with, you know, going back to the mid-90s. Two particular individuals who I'm blessed that I'm actually continuing to work with. And we've really become mentors, not only colleagues and friends, but actually mentors and advisors to each other. So I think mentorship changes during your career, but it is a key element to being successful. And I think having satisfaction, because again, I think as you develop, mentors can actually become not only friends, but, you know, lifelong friends and lifelong colleagues.
Can you share what guidance you would give to someone who's interested in having the kind of career that you've had?
Giving guidance for a career that would take a similar pathway, I think just starts with being open-minded and being willing to explore and take risks. I mentioned earlier that, you know, I have twins. They're currently 25. They've been in the workforce 3 years. My wife, Michal, is also a first-generation college student. And as I mentioned, you know, has had a very successful career in global finance. And I think we think a lot in terms of a lot of the things that we discussed today. And certainly, if you ask my children what we were like as parents, you would get an answer that we were a handful, but they also now are old enough that they reflect, they recognize that the things that we were telling them over and over and over and over again were for a reason. And it is about being willing to put in hard work. It is about being willing to take risks. It is a willingness to be vulnerable and to ask questions. And again, with risks, you take a risk, you fail, that's okay. You don't get derailed, we can't, you know, go on. I mean, that's just not the way life is. You know, life has ups and downs. Life has lots of, you know, twists to it. And as part of that, you develop as an individual, and it actually shapes who you are, but it also shapes what you do. And, you know, as I said, I never thought I would have been a researcher. I was a researcher. I never really thought I'd be a business leader. I've been a business leader. So that's sort of my advice to everyone, is open mind, being willing to take risks, look for mentorship. And then I think the last piece of it is be a good person. Don't look for shortcuts. People I've heard think that I'm very tough, you know, particularly my learners. And I wear that as, you know, a badge of honor. I'm tough because I want people to be successful. And, you know, I think when people train under me and they get out a couple of years, I think like my kids did, they eventually reflect back and recognize, you know, what I was doing had purpose. It wasn't that I'm mean and I was trying to make them feel bad. It was that I was tough on them because I saw their potential ability, and I wanted to make sure that they recognized it and got the most out of their training and reached their maximum capacity. Because I do believe most people underestimate what they're able to achieve.
This episode of 2400 Chew was produced by the Office of Alumni Affairs at Muhlenberg College. It was recorded remotely and engineered in the studios of WMUH Allentown, Pennsylvania. Our opening and closing music, from Cowboy Bebop, is performed by the Muhlenberg College Jazz Big Band.